G'day team, welcome to another installment of the U Project. Craig Anthony Harper rocking up as I do on a daily basis to bring awesome humans to you to chat and share and enlighten us and inspire us. And today, I think today's guest is all of that and a little bit more. I watched a whole bunch of him last night while I was in bed. I'm not sure about that, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I did go to bed dreaming about critters and animals. But before we introduce Ranger Nick, we'll say hello to Tiffany Ann Cook. Hello, TAC.
Hello, Harps. Happy Friday morning.
Happy Friday at 07:30 here in the home of good times and lockdowns. I heard somebody said to me, oh, the lockdowns, we're in lockdown, Nick. We'll come to you in a sec. But and then the changes that they introduced to the lockdown were so insignificant. It's like, well, all right, so we can go 10 kilometres, not five.
I'll be able to go for a longer bike ride now.
Well, you can go for a longer bike ride, but anyway. Ranger Nick, Professor Nick, Mr. Nick, all the way from the States. How are you? Good morning, sir. Good evening, your time.
I'm doing great, Craig. I'm doing great. It is 5:30 in the evening on Thursday here in Georgia, USA. I'm doing great. I so appreciate you inviting me to come on. Very, very humbling to be part of this.
Well, mate, we're very excited to have you. I'm going to be honest. Didn't know who you were. Then I watched a bit of you and I went, I've got to watch a bit more. Then I watched that and I went, I've got to watch a bit more. So you're a little bit, I used to have a big, big crush. On a bunch of wildlife people growing up and watch a whole lot of stuff as we do here in Australia. But you might be my new guy. You are super excited, super enthusiastic and super passionate. And like, I think when, and we say this a lot, you know, when your purpose and your passion and your career collide, it's kind of a beautiful combination, right?
It really is. And I am very, very humbled by that every day to realize that I get a chance to really do what I love. And that is talk about things that I love and teach others about teaching. And that's what I do at the University of Georgia. I teach students who want to go on and become teachers. And even those that don't want to be a formal educator, I teach them about how they can take their personality and their skills in interacting with others and bring about a positive change. It's really, really cool. And I love to do things with animals in my teaching, and that just brings even more passion out to me.
So let's start, well, maybe not at the beginning, not at day one, but let's start when, so you were a pretty little kid and you were fascinated with animals and you went along, you had an obsession, correct me if I get some of this wrong, but with a dude called Ranger Bill, who you loved. Did you see Tiff?
No.
Did you see? Oh, so cute, so cute. And wherever you saw Ranger Bill at a 45-minute show, and that experience changed your life. Tell us about that.
It did. And I call it the power of an hour. I mean, it was really about an hour of time between the time he walked in that building and the time he left. I was 7 years old in elementary school in Maryland, where I'm originally from, on the East Coast of the U.S., and we had this guest speaker coming to school, and his name, they called him Ranger Bill. He worked for the Department of Natural Resources in Maryland. He was an educator, but he used animals as ambassadors of his message. And so he brought this owl and hawk and vulture and turtle and snake with him into that class and was teaching us with these animals. And the guy was edutaining, and I love that word, because he wasn't just dry and, well, this bird lives here and eats this, but the guy was funny and he was captivating, and his body language and his voice and everything he did really showed us that he valued our time. And he just got us excited as kids. And I thought, I want to be like that guy. And that's what happened. I went home and I told my parents about him. We figured out where he was going to be in the local community, bringing these animals with him. And so I just kind of started showing up with my parents like a Ranger Bill groupie, you know, like I would just, there I am in the back. And I'm sure he's thinking, what is this little blonde haired kid doing at the back of the room watching me all the time? I just love to listen to him. I love to watch him. And then over time, he became a mentor of mine. I volunteered to help him. I cleaned a lot of cages. Let me tell you, owls and hawks are dirty animals. But I did all that stuff to be around him and learn about the way he did things, how he taught. And slowly he let me start handling animals and stand in front of an audience and teach with them. And I was hooked. I love it. And that's all I've ever known is doing that. That's all I've ever wanted to do.
I love that story. I love that you basically created your own opportunity, because as I remember with your TED talk, you, I think when you were 8 years old, correct me if I'm wrong, you basically kept traveling around and following him. And one day you got the courage to go and talk to him, mm-hmm. and you told him how much, you know, you love him and his work. And you're 8 and you said, how can I spend more time with you? And right. From 8 till 16, you basically started cleaning up poo.
That's right. Craig, you've got a great memory. That's the story. I mean, spending time with him, doing things that he knew he needed to have done. Here's this little kid that could help. And I just got to be around it. And, you know, I still keep in touch with him today. He knows I'm in Georgia and I'm teaching here. And he realizes that, an hour, not even an hour, spent with this little kid all those years ago put me on this path to doing what I'm doing. And I think that's what I try to remind my students about when they go into a school and give a presentation, or when they're interacting with folks. They will remember you. And who knows, that interaction you have with folks could change their whole life. As cliched as that sounds, my story is a true story. I mean, that's what can happen. That's the power of an educator, you know?
You know, what I love is, sorry, I'm listening, but I'm writing notes because
sure.
Like I love, this is what I love, Nick. I'm passionate about teaching as well and sharing thoughts and ideas and stories. And I was watching you, and this is not a lie. I've seen maybe 1,000 TED Talks over the years. You're in my top 3 ever. And I mean that genuinely. Really? No,
means
really.
Thanks.
No, dude. And I mean, I would not have clicked on it, not because I'm not interested, but I went, oh, it's a guy talking about animals. Okay, cool. Whatever, right? So in my top 3 are Sir Ken Robinson, who did a talk called Why Creativity Is, or Why Schools Are Killing Creativity. Mm. And you would be up there. And I can't think of, there's got to be a couple, but there's many. But you're from when you walk out on stage, and anyone, if you're thinking about being a speaker, a communicator of any kind, a teacher, a coach, a leader, and you want to create connection, watch this dude on TED. It is like, it's like a masterclass of connection and communication and public speaking, because there's a big difference. And you know what is fascinating? We also, Tiff and I spoke to a lady yesterday, God bless, who was awesome. She's a neuroscientist, and she did a TED talk, and like TED's my go-to research page, right? Okay. And she was really good. But literally everything had to be scripted for her. Mm-hmm. So she did like a 14 minutes. It's essentially, and it was great, but it was essentially a scripted, memorized performance. Whereas you, there's no chance that was that. And I was looking at this dude freestyling on stage and thinking, this is a masterclass in how to build rapport with a bunch of people really quickly. Is that learned? Is that a skill you developed? Is that innate? Because I feel like it's primarily just who you are.
Well, you know, I really appreciate those comments, Craig. It means a lot. It is, it's something that when I get asked, do I have a hidden talent? I really don't have any talents. The only thing that I would say is I do believe I have the gift of gab. I feel like I can carry on a conversation for as long as I need to. We could stretch this out and make it shorter or longer, but I really do feel comfortable in front of an audience. And I think it's because I've made mistakes in front of audiences. I've tripped, I've fallen off a stage, I've been holding an animal and it pees on me or whatever. And things just happen and I just keep going. And I have done that enough that I just realized that, you know, when unexpected things happen, and in that TED talk, I call it a teachable moment. You know, when teachable moments happen, it makes us more human. So I just go out there for that TED talk. I had points I wanted to make, the 4 points about care that I shared in that talk. And I knew what I wanted to say, but I kind of just built it in, and I had a conversation with the audience. And that's how I teach. I'm prepared, but I'm also not scripted, not tied to my agenda. If I need to go off somewhere and tell them a story and bring them back, I do. But it's what I love to do. I absolutely love to stand in front of an audience and talk to them and build rapport with them. It's when you love something, it kind of comes naturally. And to me, that's the only thing I've ever felt like I can do. And I would say I can do fairly well. I love to teach, and I don't like talking about myself, but if there's one thing I feel like I can do, I can teach, and I can go out there. And it was just so humbling to get a chance to do that in front of those folks. And I wish I could do it every night. I really do. I love that.
Well, you're connecting with a few people right now who are loving you. So what about, so you're 8 years old and you figure out what you want to do with your life, which is really special, but also rare.
Right.
As an educator and as a, you know, somebody who guides people, and I know you work with a lot of students. I love that story about the football player who came back free stamp. That
oh yeah,
that made me laugh. We'll talk about him in a minute. But do you have any insight into? I mean, I know people who are 40, Ranger Nick, who are trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. You know, it's like, yeah. I know people who are 50. I've worked and coached and mentored people who they're okay, but they're not living their passion. They're still like, do you have any insight into how, and this is just a general question, but finding our purpose or our passion or our, you know, that thing that's going to light the fire that you had lit or a version of that.
I tell you one thing I always tell my students is I said, never be afraid to tell somebody that you enjoy something you're doing. You know, if you're in the midst of doing something and you really like it, tell somebody that you really like this and don't be afraid to get excited about it.
Yeah.
It's that passion is contagious. And I feel like you want to try to be around people, do what you love for people who love what you do. I guess it's one of those sayings out there. And I feel like if you're doing what you love, you're going to be successful at it. And then the other things are, I hope, going to follow. The notoriety and maybe the success, if we think about that in terms of a career, that's going to follow where you get paid to do what you love. But I feel like if you don't tell somebody that you enjoy something, and I tell my students that, if you like something, tell somebody you really like it, especially in a university, because if you tell a professor that you like something, they can put you in touch with other people that are doing that and kind of encourage you to do that. But I think that that idea, if anybody ever tells you to be more serious about something and less passionate, I just think that's not good advice. I say, be passionate, be yourself. You're always going to see me smiling and enjoying what I'm doing. And it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I do that. And I find that people gravitate to that. They want to be around that. I've been very fortunate, like you say, that I figured out what I love very, very early on. But in my family, so I have one sister, in my family, no one else, I was the first person to go to college in my family. No one else is a teacher. No one else has any comfort standing in front of an audience and talking to them. So I'm not sure where I got this. And my parents remind me, like, I don't know where you got this thing from, but you love this and you're so good at it. I don't know. I love to talk and teach. And I think one of the coolest things is seeing the difference that you can make on. I mean, just hearing your stories about you watching me, I'm just so humbled that you watched that thing and you remembered what I said. I just think that's cool. I'm so appreciative of that.
You know what? At the moment, studying full time, working full time, and doing 7 podcasts a week. Sure. And so I don't have much free time, right? And I jumped on your... I'm just being honest. I jumped on your TED talk and it's 23 minutes. And I kind of rolled my eyes and went 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I like those 12 minute ones, right? I'll get a snapshot of this person and I'll take a few notes. And then halfway through, I'm thinking, I wish it went longer than 23 minutes. I didn't. Oh, I literally got to the 20 minute mark. I wanted it to keep going. So then I had to go and look for other stuff. You know, that is a unique ability that you have. So well done on that. But also, how great was it that you had a mum and dad that even though they're like, wow, where does this kid come from? What is this? But they supported you and took you around to see, you know, Ranger Bill and to be able to have that opportunity to create a connection with him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my dad, is okay with snakes. He doesn't love them. I always had snakes as pets. I always had turtles. I always had all these animals. My parents love animals. My dad, maybe not so much the snake side, but they always encourage that. And they have pictures of me as a 9 or 10 year old bringing my pets to a neighbor's birthday party to give a little animal show there. And there I am doing it. That's just all I've ever wanted to do is stand up and talk about nature and animals and see that reaction that people get. And I tell you, you know, over the years, there's only so many different ways to say some of the facts about animals. I mean, there's only so many different ways to say, here's what this thing eats and here's how big it gets. And, but it doesn't matter how many times I say those same lines, I never get tired of it because it's the reaction that I see in the audience. That's so cool. It never, ever gets old. You know, it's, and sometimes if you're doing something, and I've seen teachers that it's clear that they're tired of saying what they're saying. And I always think, well, you change that, change it. If you're bored with it, surely the audience or your students are going to be bored. So within reason, teachers can tweak things and put their personality on things, get themselves excited, and then hopefully the audience will be excited too. That's a pretty cool thing about a job is I can bend things around and make them my own and teach that content. I feel very privileged to be able to do that.
Yeah. And also, if you're standing on stage or in front of a classroom or even on a podcast and you're uninspired, what are the chances of you inspiring anyone else? Zero.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, yeah. I part of my background, Nick, is owning gyms and personal training facilities. And so I would, when I would, even with my own staff sometimes, and probably even with me, if I'm being humble and honest, but I would travel around Australia to different venues and I would see sometimes people on the floor working in gyms, not often, but sometimes who look really like they don't want to be there, really bored, really disinterested, really uninspired, and kind of nonchalantly telling their clients what to do. And I'm thinking, if I was training with this dude, I would just leave the gym and go straight to McDonald's because this guy's inspiring. This guy's inspiring no one, you know?
Right.
So tell us about, I learned lots of things. One of the things I learned was, now, Tiff, I'm going to teach you something. There are no poisonous snakes. Did you know that?
Well, in Tassie, they're all poisonous. Tell me the story.
No, they're not poisonous, Tiff. They're venomous.
Oh, right.
Right. So there you go. Yeah. That's Ranger Craig sharing something with you. Now, Nick, tell us how we tell venomous from non-venomous.
Yeah, it's funny, Craig. You know, and I talk about this with an audience because people, they'll often say to you, was it poisonous? And the first thing I'm thinking is, well, even if it was poisonous, I wouldn't be holding the thing. You know, I mean, I wouldn't do that. But that idea of venom being injected, you know, like a bee does and snakes inject venom. So it's venomous or non-venomous. And then I start reading about some of these things about how folks can tell the difference between a venomous and a non-venomous snake. When you think about it, here are some of the ways that the textbooks say. They'll say, well, one thing you can do is look at the shape of its head. They'll say, so a non-venomous snake's head is an oval shape, kind of like your thumb, and a venomous snake's head is a triangular shape because of the venom glands behind its jaw. Well, I always say, well, okay, you got to get kind of close to a snake to tell what shape head it has, you know? So that's a little bit risky, right? So then you kind of read on, and they'll say, okay, all right, look at the shape of the eyes, the pupils. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, sure. They say non-venomous snakes have round pupils, and venomous snakes have vertical slits, kind of like a cat's eye. But think about it, you know, somebody picking up a snake, looking at its face, hey, are you venomous? I mean, by that time it got you on the nose, you know? But then if you keep reading on, there's another way that you can tell, and this is actually pretty accurate, but it involves picking a snake up, looking at its belly around where it goes to the bathroom. They call it the vent, right? And they said, look at the shape of the scales around that area. And I'm just thinking, okay, we went from looking at the shape of the head, got to get pretty close. Look at the shape of the eyes, you got to get even closer. And then look at the scales on the underside of the snake. Now I'm picking it up and I'm looking at its butt to determine that. Surely somebody's going to get bit by then. So I just say, look, when you see a snake, don't worry if it's venomous or not. Just leave it alone. Just kind of, hey, thanks for doing what you're doing. I'm going to be over here. You stay over there. Don't try to kill it, you know? So it's just important.
I'm going to be over here accelerating in the opposite direction at a rapid rate. So you enjoy your little natural habitat. I remember you sharing the fact that because you are somewhat evangelical when you talk and teach and, you know, share, some people said if the whole environmental animal teaching thing doesn't work, you could be an evangelist, right? And I thought, well, you are an evangelist. You just don't have a Bible in your hand.
Right. You know, and I may have said this TED Talk, my great grandmother, who lived to be 99, always, ever since I was a little kid, called me her little preacher boy. She would say that because I always at family stuff or whatever would be in front of everybody talking about something and teaching. And she saw that early on. Boy, this kid, and people have literally come up to me when I get done speaking somewhere and they've said, have you ever thought about being a preacher, you know, being in a church and sermoning, because you have this talent. And I don't know. I love to talk in front of folks. I love to share a message. And maybe I should consider that. I don't know.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that as a side hustle, but
I know, yeah.
I don't know, mate, that you'll make a lot of dough doing it, but I don't think that's your primary purpose. Tell us about your use of stamps for tell
well,
us about that
right here. So I know you can see it on the camera. I literally, here's one right here. It's a turtle stamp. I mentioned this in a TED Talk. I know that some friends of mine know that I teach college and they hear about me stamping students' assignments and they probably think, and I know they tell me this, this is not fourth grade. You know, how are you stamping some 20-some-year-old student's assignment and they're not just laughing at this or rolling their eyes and seeing this as just immature? Why? I said, well, listen, I said, I believe that people that feel appreciated will probably do more than those who don't feel appreciated. So first I thought, well, the stamps might make them feel appreciated if they earn a 90% or higher on an assignment and they earn this stamp. So they might say, wow, okay, I got this thing. And maybe on the next assignment, I'm gonna try to do better. So I thought that, and then that story of that student at the University of Florida, that football player, I was handing back assignments in class and I got done handing them back. This is a big class. And I went back to my little cubicle as a graduate student at the University of Florida. And I'm in my little cubicle there after class and there's a knock at the door. And I look up and there's this gigantic football player at the door. I mean, he was just took up the whole door. This big guy, big linebacker guy. And he's holding his assignment in his hand. And he's like, Ranger Nick, can I talk to you about this? And I'm thinking, okay, he's probably unhappy with the grade that he got and he wants to talk to me about it. Okay, sure, come on in. So he comes over to my desk and he gives me this assignment. He says, Ranger Nick, he said, I got a 91% on this and I didn't get a stamp. I look at it and I'm looking at the front of the assignment and there's no stamp. I mean, I must've just forgotten. So I get into my desk and I get this little owl stamp. I love owls. And I get this little owl stamp out and I stamped it on his page. And I wrote right there in front of him, I wrote owl standing work. I just wrote it and I handed it back. So here's this big football player standing there and I hand it to him. And if you could have seen him light up, this big tough guy, and walk out of there like he was just so proud of himself. And I remember some of the other grad students in the office with me when he left, they were like, what the world was that about? This guy came all the way over here to get a stamp. I said, I guess it meant something to him. So from that point forward, I was really convinced that this must mean something. And then over the years, I've heard from students of mine who have kept their graded assignments and told me, hey, I still got that one that you put a turtle on and wrote excellent work across. You know, it was just that goofy stuff. Students, that really matters. So, and I laugh about it too. I stamp their page. I'm like, hey, good for you. You got a 93%. Man, that's great. Here's this stamp. It's simple. It takes a second or two to do, and it matters to those students. So it's pretty cool stuff. And
I don't know if you did that. I love that so much because you built a culture, you know, you built a place for people to be that's much more than just a classroom and, you become much more than just a bloke, as we call you in Australia, a bloke, much more than just a bloke up the front teaching. You know, you become important to them. And like, I think back about my schooling, and I didn't have terrible teachers, but there's only one that stood out for me, and he taught me in year 9, and his name was Mr. Ryan. And he was an ex-policeman who got shot and had to retire. And he retrained as a teacher. And he was my, what we call home teacher in year 9. He was the most down-to-earth, straightforward, right? Now, I'm in an all-boys private Catholic college. And when I would muck up in class, which was often, he would come up to me, lean into my ear and go, Harper, don't be a dickhead. Like, I'd go, yes, sir. Like, but that was all he had to say. And I would love it that he would talk to me like that, because it felt, I don't know, I felt like we had a thing, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, it was, even though he was telling me off, there was something enjoyable about it, you know? So, and I think that ability, you know, especially when you're working with kids, and even 19, 20 year old athletes are still kids, really. I mean, they've got one foot in being a kid and one foot in being an adult. I remember when I was 19, I think I was about 90% child and 10% man. I was like a man child working in gyms. But so have you ever been to Oz? Have you ever been down here?
No, I have not. And you know what? It's when you talk about the folks from down there, that, of course, everybody in the United States thinks about Steve Irwin. And we talk about him quite a bit in my classes that involve environmental education, because when you talk about somebody with passion and enthusiasm and energy, and somebody that I would have imagined that when the cameras were not on, he was exactly the same. I mean, I would have just loved to have met that guy and just see him live in person. It just seems like, and look at the difference worldwide that guy has made. So I've never been down there, but if I was to get down there, I'd love to go to his zoo and just see the difference that he made there, because that's one person that worldwide people make just think the world of, I think, still all these years later.
So true. And it's funny, we're heading towards 600 episodes. I don't think we've ever spoken about Steve Irwin, but we did last night, didn't we, Tiff?
Yeah.
Like we did an episode last night with this, also a professor, and we were talking about a thing called memory editing, which is a whole other conversation. It's quite interesting. But we were talking about memories, you know, moments in time, Nick, that we have where something happened and you can remember it like it happened yesterday, but it was 15 years ago. You can remember where you were and how you felt and, you know, and it was funny because there's about, I don't know how many of those I have, but Steve Irwin is definitely one, because I loved Steve Irwin like many people. And I was at work on the gym floor and we had TVs around the gym, and the TVs were silent, but the music was on, and I saw the screen and it just said that Steve Irwin had passed away. So I ran in and turned off all the music and turned up the television. And I remember, you know, and I'd obviously never met him, but he was so inspirational. And I remember standing on the gym floor, like with tears coming down my face, thinking Steve Irwin can't be dead. Like, how could he be dead? Like, this dude's going to live forever. And he's like, there was nobody that didn't like him, you know? So, yeah, it's such, and what do you think made him so amazing at what he did? Because it wasn't obvious. It was more than just knowledge, because lots of people have got knowledge.
I think what it did, and it's funny you say that, a lot of my students, I don't know if you can hear my bird clock chirping.
No.
6 o'clock p.m. is chirping. It's kind of cool. I think I tell my students a lot, don't worry about not knowing enough about a particular subject. You can know a little bit about it, but I think it's the personality. It's the ability to connect. I think what it was with Steve Irwin was the energy that he put on that camera, but he was genuine. He genuinely, when he would call something beautiful, and look at this beauty, look how pretty this is, he's looking at something that most people would not consider beautiful. And he's talking about it and pointing out features and talking to it in a way that it has a personality, like it's another person. And he's caring about it. And the way he interacts with it and the way he appreciated and respected its home. He was in its home when he was outside and he respected that. And that was, I think people looked at that like, wow, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should think about when I'm outside, it's like somebody coming into my house. I would want them to respect my house. So I'm outside, I'm going to respect this thing's house. Even though this thing I think is not so pretty, Steve Irwin thinks it's gorgeous. And the more you look at it, you go, well, he's got a point. Look at how beautiful its eye is and look at its scales. And I think that passion, I think the genuineness, I always use that word being genuine with my students because it's obvious when someone is faking it, I think. And it's obvious when someone genuinely cares and is passionate. And that's what you saw with him. It was like every single episode, you thought, I would love to hang out with that guy. Yeah. I would love to see him out on the street and just talk to him. I bet he's just the funniest, coolest guy to talk to. Nice, has a heart. That, I think, is what did it. He really seemed to care about every one of those animals. And I think that that was contagious. And every once in a while, folks have said to me, you remind me of like the Steve Irwin of Georgia, you know, in USA. And boy, that's a heck of a compliment. You know, I think about that thing. Boy, that's about the highest compliment I could get because the way people looked at Steve Irwin, if somebody looks at me for my energy and how much I love to teach in even the same neighborhood as him, wow, that's incredible. I really, that means a lot. Well, so he was something else.
There are definitely some similarities, definitely. And you do, your energy definitely reminds me of his energy, which is nice. Tell us, give us a snapshot. Most of us, about 90% of my audience are Australian. We have American and UK listeners also. But for those of us who don't know much about Georgia, give us the 1 or 2 minute tutorial on Georgia, where you grew up.
Oh, yeah. So I'm originally from Maryland, which is about 500 miles or so north of where I am now. But in Georgia, I'm in northeastern Georgia. So Atlanta, Georgia is a pretty big city here, big airport. They call it the busiest airport in the world, Atlanta Airport. It's a zoo.
Really?
Any other airport is like a piece of cake compared to Atlanta Airport. It's crazy. But Atlanta is about an hour and a half west of where I am. So in northeast Georgia, we get the seasons. So autumn, winter, spring, summer. Not too far from here is the mountains. So it's really pretty mountain country north of here. Georgia touches the coast, the Atlantic Ocean. So we have a lot of barrier islands on the coast. And quite a few of my students have worked at the Georgia Sea Turtle Center, which is where a lot of loggerhead turtles come to the beaches here to nest between May and September. And a lot of those turtles end up getting injured in things. So they go to the Sea Turtle Center and get rehabilitated. And my students have worked there. We have a thing called 4-H in the United States. And 4-H is a youth development program. And that's a pretty big thing in Georgia. So across the state, we have 4-H centers where kids go and learn about the environment and nature and being a good citizen and service and giving back. And that's a really special thing. One of the great things about Georgia is it's in the southeastern United States. So there's that southern hospitality that we talk a lot about. And it is a true thing. You know, growing up in the Northeast, it was different than it is in the South. I'll say the South is a friendly place. People talk to one another. They wave at one another when they're driving. They're very polite, mannerly in general. It's just a really great place to be. I got to tell you, though, this time of year, it is getting less hot. But between June and August, it is really humid and really hot here. It's a good thing to be inside that time of the year. So we have two kids. We spend quite a bit of time at the pool during that time of the year with the kids, but it's cooling down here now. But yeah, Georgia's a great place.
How old are your kids, Nick?
So Miles is 4 and a half, our son, and our daughter Ellis is 2. So it is a high energy place at our house. And let me tell you something, if you think that I'm high energy and excited, our son and our daughter, my wife will tell you, they are fired up. And from the time they wake up to the time we finally convince them to shut their eyes, It is full throttle. I mean, they are 110 miles an hour, and that's a good thing. And we can't keep them inside. They have got to be outside. We've got a bunch of critters at home, a bunch of pets, snakes and turtles and things. And it's so cool to see our kids loving those. You know, yeah. Our daughter, Ellis, will want to kiss the turtles. Sometimes I say, no, don't kiss them. You can't kiss them. She wants to hug on them, and she waves at them. And, oh, hey, baby. And I mean, just the way they talk to animals is really, really great. So I love that they love the things that we love so far. Now, if Miles wanted to be a football player and not have anything to do with nature or the outdoors or whatever, that would be great. But if he wants to do anything related to teaching or the environment or nature, I can set him up. I can help him out there. So
yeah,
we'll see what they want to do.
Yeah, I think there's a door that might open there. I want to talk to you about one of the things that fascinates me is, and a lot of things do, but is animal intelligence. And, you know, obviously most of us, the most contact that we've had in terms of familiarity is usually with dogs or cats or domesticated animals. But sometimes, like, I've had a bunch of dogs in my life, and I know it's not the same as a vulture or a turtle or a snake. Professor, but I feel like animals have their own unique kind of intelligence that I think is far greater than sometimes we assume.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Every single animal that I've ever worked with, whether it was an owl, whether it was a vulture, a turtle, a snake, I can see a personality in them. They like certain things. They don't like certain things. And if you watch their behavior and their body language, I mean, they'll show you that they like certain things and they don't like certain things, especially the birds of prey, owls, hawks, eagles, falcons. They'll like certain people and not other people. And it's obvious watching them. This is a wild bird that's come into captivity because it's injured. It's been hit by a car, permanently injured, can't be released. I had a great horned owl, which is a beautiful bird we have in the U.S. Had quite a few great horned owls when I worked in Maryland. They were all injured, non-releasable. We used them in education. I had one big female great horned owl that only liked me and nobody else. And everybody called it, oh, that's Nick's bird. If Nick's not working today, she's not doing anything. She's not going to go with anybody else except him. And I don't know, there were others that didn't like me at all and some that really loved me. So animals are smarter than people give them credit for. And I'll say this, I don't have any data on this, but I really believe that the animals that are used as ambassadors of messages and things, I really believe that they know that they have a purpose. That when I would take that owl out in front of an audience and it's standing there on stage with me and sitting on my hand with a glove on, you know, I think it knows that it's here. It can't go in the wild. This guy is here helping me. And I'm being used to teach others. I think they know that. And I'll tell you this, we have had animals over the years we've used in education that have, I mean, far exceeded their lifespan. And I really believe it's because they feel a sense of purpose. The animals know that they're being used for something to help others. And it's just like when an elderly person continues to stay active, continues to go out and visit with people, that extends their life versus just staying at home by themselves and kind of wasting away. I think it helps animals. Those animals know that they have a purpose. And I really believe, I don't have any data, but I really believe that helps them as much as it does the audience. It really does.
That's so interesting because there is a lot of research around, you know, longevity and not only just longevity, but health span, not just lifespan of, and, you know, yeah, you're right. It's, when people feel like they have a purpose and connection and they're valued and they're loved. And I think energetically animals know that. And I don't know, for me, I feel like it's something vibrational or energetic where they pick up whether or not you're a threat or you're a friend.
Right. Yeah. What do I know though? I don't know either, but I think we give off a vibe. I'll say this. People will often ask me, I'll say, okay, so what are you afraid of, Nick? What animals don't you like? And I say, all right, there's two that I am not very comfortable around. One, in the US, they're not from here, but these Madagascar hissing cockroaches, these gigantic cockroaches they'll have in nature centers and stuff. I just cannot stand it. I just think they're just so, you could drop a snake out of the ceiling on me and I'd be fine. But if I saw a cockroach 100 feet away from me, oh no, we got to deal with that. I hate cockroaches. I don't like them. And horses make me really nervous. I've spent some time around horses. That's a big animal. I think that animal knows that I'm nervous. And I think it tries to take advantage of me. Like it'll push me around a little. I'll see some people go in there and they'll just push it out of the way in the stall. And I try to do that and I don't get anywhere. And I think the horse knows, okay, this guy's not comfortable. I'm in charge now. So it's animals, I think, pick up on that nervousness. I don't know what the cockroach does. I just think those things are, no, I would never use that. You'll never see me holding a cockroach. Nope.
I was a horse, I would definitely push you around after you, that story.
And you know how easy it would be. I mean, I'm not that big of a guy, but here I am kind of like, okay, buddy, that's okay. If you don't want to go over there, no problem. We'll just stay here.
A friend of mine, or not a friend of mine, someone that I've met a few times that I know reasonably well, who had, how do I say this without disclosing too much information, but addiction problems. So she had problems with booze and drugs, which is no secret, but did a program in the out here in the bush that a big part of the program was working with horses. And she fell in love with horses, and that basically for her, she said, horses saved my life, because there was something magical going on. And, you know, so many, I've seen a few things where people think that horses are super intelligent. I wonder if that's true. I wonder if that's, they just have a special connection with some people.
I don't know. I mean, that's a great, I think all animals have a certain level of intelligence. And I think that most people don't give them the credit of knowing as much as we think they know. I think animals are smarter than we think.
Yeah.
And I think that animals have certain abilities to sense things. If you look at around here before we get snow, which I love it when we get a little bit of snow in Georgia, because nobody knows how to drive in it, which is great. So everybody stays home and you can just play outside in the snow. So right before it snows, it's funny to watch animals. We feed the birds at our house with bird feeders and stuff. It's funny to watch the birds before a snow comes. I mean, they are loading up on food. There's all kind of activity. So you can tell something's going on. We'll see more deer around our house and in their yard right before some weather event. These animals know something's happening, you know, and if you watch them, they'll tell you a lot. And it's one of those senses that those animals have, just incredible.
What's an animal, Ranger Nick, that you've never met, in inverted commas, that you would like to meet?
You know, I tell you what, I would love to meet, you know, the sea otters. You always see them on TV and they're laying on their back. And
they've got
like a little clam on their chest and they're busting the clam open. They look so darn cute. I would love to see one of those sea otters. I've always heard that they look a lot cuter. They look more cute than they are nice. I've heard that they can be very nasty. So, you just want to squeeze one. You want to hug it. They look so cute. They're laying out there in the water, cracking their little clam. I don't know. I'd love to meet a sea otter. They look so cute.
I think bears fall into that category. They look cute, but I don't want to hug one. Well, I do want to hug one, but I don't think it's a good idea.
Right.
So tell us about your work right now. What are you working on right now? Are you doing, do you do projects? Are you building new stuff? How often are you in the classroom?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So right now in the fall semester that we're in right now, I teach a couple of undergraduate classes. I teach a freshman level introduction to environmental education class, which is for students all over campus. They're not necessarily in agriculture or natural resources. And I bring the animals in and I show them how to handle them, how to teach with them. I also show them things that zoos and aquariums do, and developing exhibits and signs and their goals of moving an audience from awareness to action to help the environment. How do we do that? We're going to go to Zoo Atlanta in a couple of weeks as a class and evaluate some of their exhibits together, how effective they are at engaging the public. So that's one class. I do a class called Teaching with Animals, which is really cool. It's just like it sounds. It's a public speaking class, but with animals. And the coolest thing about that is no matter how nervous a student might be about standing up in front of others and teaching, when I give them an animal, after I've shown them how to handle it and how to be safe with it, they become so much more conversational because they tell me, I don't feel like people are looking at me. They're looking at this turtle. And they just relax and they become more of themselves. And what's even better, I think, when they're holding an animal is when something unexpected happens, like if they're holding a turtle and it pees on them. So that happens sometimes. But it's amazing. I'll videotape my students when they're teaching, and then they have to watch themselves on video, which is super awkward, but very eye-opening. So they can hear themselves and watch themselves teach and figure out, oh, I didn't know I said that word 57 times, you know that? Yeah. But when something unexpected happens, like the turtle peeing on them, from that moment forward, they become such a better communicator because it's like, okay, they laugh, the class laughs, they're still alive, they have to keep going, and they just do, and they relax more. So that class is really cool. What's so special about that, and I mentioned this in the TED Talk, those students take my animals to a place called Extra Special People, which is an organization not too far from the University of Georgia that several hundred individuals with special needs go to, primarily kids with special needs. And to see college students go to this organization, bring these animals and teach those participants, I mean, it's just the coolest. I would say it's the best thing I've ever done in my career is partner college students with those with, I call special abilities, and see the difference it makes. You know, you're teaching college students about empathy, about patience, about working with others, appreciating that kind of diversity. It's just neat. I mean, it's, gosh, that is a cool thing. So we're doing that. Tomorrow on Friday, for us, tomorrow, I'll be going out and taping another Ranger Nick TV segment. I tape them every month. I have a usually a 7 or 8 minute spot on television here every month where we call it Ranger Nick. And I go out and I do something related to natural resources and ag. And tomorrow I'm going out into a marsh with a teacher and I'm going to be a student and she's going to show me what she does with her students to measure water quality and look at habitat for different animals. And they have this bus that they put the students on called a bio bus. And I'm going to do some activities on this bus. Like I'm a student. So I'm going to show the folks at home something positive in the education world. In the US, there's a lot of talk about COVID and restrictions in schools. I want to put a spotlight on, you know, this lady is still teaching outdoors.
Yeah.
But teaching with students in an innovative way. So our camera guy and I are going to go out tomorrow, Ray and I, and have some fun out in the water. I'll have my waders on. I'll be out there. The more dirty I can get, the more of an interesting situation, the better. People love to watch that, you know, so I'll be doing that tomorrow. I love that TV thing. That's been a really cool, we've done that almost 8 years. So
yeah,
I've really, really loved that.
All right. So where can people find that? Do you have a YouTube channel or where can they connect?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you go Nick Furman, NickFurman.org, I think, and look, I'm sitting there, you'd think I would know this.
Yeah, you'd think that. I would know my own. Yeah, no pressure, but you know, if you can figure that out.
If they go to NickFurman.org, a friend of mine created this website for me. It makes me feel so special. You know, I have this website and we post the talks on there, our TV segments on there, and there's the TED Talk on there and stuff. And then, you know, folks can email me. It's my last name. So F like in Frank, U-H-R-M-A-N, Furman, at UGA.edu. And I get emails from folks. I tell you what, I get more emails than I ever would have expected from folks that watch that TED Talk, way more than people that watch me on TV. So that has really opened some doors for me. And I'm just forever grateful that people watch, that they stick around for all 23 minutes, you know, and like y'all, you reach out and say, man, thanks for doing what you're doing. Can we talk to you? And I love that. I never thought I would be doing this. And this is just such a joy. So I'm really, really thankful.
Well, mate, it's win-win because it is great for us to connect with you. You're a good dude. Your energy is amazing. I love how much you love what you do. And I love how much you love not just animals, but you love people, you know, and we need more people like you in the world sharing passion. And it wouldn't matter what, like, you could sell cars, I would want to get you on, because it's not about, do you know what I mean? It's just your energy is amazing. So what we're going to do is we're going to share your website that your friend built. We're going to steer people towards your stuff. We're going to share your email. And if in one day you ever get all the way down in the Southern Hemisphere, let us know when you're coming and we'll show you around and we'll take you and show you some animals over here.
Oh, man, that would be great. And I say this too, Craig, you know, with all the technology stuff going on online now, I have spoken for different organizations in other countries through Zoom. So I've been invited to do keynote talks and things in different places all over Zoom. I travel the US and give live talks, but that's always something that humbles me, is to be invited to go and give a talk somewhere. And if I can drive there, I always bring animals. Now, if I'm flying, I usually can't, but I mean, it could be something in Australia to go online and visit with a group live over Zoom and get to do something. I'd love to do that. Anytime I can connect with folks and share a message like that, maybe make them smile, that's a good thing. It means a lot to me.
That's actually a really good idea. So all of my education friends and my corporate friends who listen, think about getting Professor Nick or Ranger Nick along to have a talk to your group and a little bit of inspiration and information and edutainment. Don't go astray, especially right now. So you stay on the call, Nick. We'll say goodbye to everyone, then we'll say goodbye to you off air. But thank you so much again for being part of the U Project. You're a gem.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thanks so much for the invitation. Thanks, everybody, for listening to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks, Tiff.
Thank you. Thanks, Ranger Nick.
Oh, I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, everyone. Love your guts.